How's everybody doing tonight? The crowd has thinned a little bit. That's not unexpected. Is anybody here for the first time? All right. Just one person. That's all right. We don't make you wear a special beanie or anything. You'll be fine. Have you been active in any meditation before?
Yeah.
Okay, good, good. All right. So we'll kind of review things a little bit. Like I said, we do that at the beginning of each session. So we'll start out with just a little bit of mindfulness practice. And if you make sure that your cell phones are off or on vibrator or whatever, I'm sure mine will be the one that makes the noise up here. So we'll get in, focus on seven areas, position. So if you're in a chair, feet up, feet flat on the floor, if you're on the floor, you know, butt firmly on the seat, on the zafu if you can. It's good if you can sit towards the front so that your hips are a little higher than your knees and it kind of opens up your pelvis a little bit and straightens out your back. So back straight, maybe like a stack of coins. Your hands comfortable. You know, you can either use a traditional right hand and left with your thumbs touching or just have them rested, whatever's most comfortable. Shoulders relaxed, top of your head kind of pulled up a little bit. Sometimes I picture as like I'm holding, balancing something on the top or a string holding the top. Allows your chin to fall forward a little bit. Your tongue behind your top teeth, front teeth. And then your eyes either closed or slightly open. And then we're going to start out, if you remember, the nine-round breathing, if you had a chance to maybe mess with that a little bit, and we did that last time. We'll start out, so with your left hand, we're going to close off the one nostril and breathe in through the left side, and then exhale through the right, and then switch. And we'll do that three times, and then we'll use the right hand and close off the left nostril, and inhale and exhale through the left. And then we'll inhale and exhale through both for three more. So that'll be nine rounds. And when you do this, imagine like clear light coming into your body when you breathe in and dark like soot and all the negativities leaving when you exhale. Okay. And then once we do that, we'll just do some breathing meditation, focus on your breath. And then I'm going to do a little bit of a guided meditation on making our mind like the ocean. And we'll talk that a little bit. So, all right. So we can start the nine round breathing. And then as you settle in on following your breathing, remind yourself why you decided to come tonight and kind of set your motivation to make this session as good as possible. Recognize there were a lot of things that you could have chosen to do, yet you chose to come here. And just follow your breath in and out. Try to stay focused, like bear attention on your breathing. If you gain a little deeper level of concentration focus, try to loosen the concentration just a little bit and emphasize the element of mindfulness. Allow your mind to be attentive and observant to whatever comes to mind, whatever comes to notice, regardless of what it is. And then just allow the thoughts to kind of pass away, like you're just an observer. You see them come, arise, and just move on. Just be aware. And then allow your mindful attention to expand a little bit to encompass your entire sphere of experience, of consciousness. Try to forget there's an observer or something being observed. Simply imagine your experience or your consciousness as being very vast and open, maybe like the sky meditation we did before. The mind can be almost like the ocean, and the thoughts and mental events kind of like fish swimming through. So when we normally do the practice, we're unaware of the nature of the mind, and instead we observe only the fish, like the thoughts. So like I mentioned, observing an aquarium through a big, large glass wall, we notice the fish, but if someone were to tell you to look at the clear water in which the fish were swimming, it might be difficult at first. And then you realize that the fish have to be swimming in something. So now you want to take your attention away from the fish and try to focus on the water instead. So we kind of step back and recognize the clear light nature of our mind, within which all those thoughts and other mental events occur. So our mind's like the ocean, clear and spacious. So our mind is ordinarily, throughout the day, like the surface of the water. We're having conversations, planning, thinking, worrying. And all of those thoughts and feelings and ideas fill our minds up. Creates a lot of turbulence and waves and agitation. But if we can identify with the mind, like the ocean, begin to let go of the wave-like emotions and the fish-like thoughts. So it's almost as if we're going deeper into the water, where it's calm, still, and free of agitation. So throughout the day, whenever we're carried away uncontrollably by the thoughts and feelings, we tend to lose that awareness of the spaciousness and clarity of the mind. And our perspective kind of becomes small and constricted. And we kind of get caught up in the waves again. When we find ourselves doing that, again, we just kind of let go, and all our minds have become the spacious purity of the water, deeper, without agitation or anxiety, dissatisfaction or attachments. All right. Were you able to allow your mind to expand like the water? Sometimes that's a little bit harder to do, I think. Personally, I don't know if anybody else found that more difficult than just concentrating on breathing. Any thoughts about that one? How'd everybody's week go? Are there things that, experiences that you had you want to share, troubles you're running into, obstacles, problems, questions? Yes, please. Oh, sorry, Chris, thank you.
Thank you very much. Jen, where are you to introduce me? So I'm in court up in Hillsboro today, right?
Mm.
I've been there twice before, and I got my keister handed to me on the platter by the judge. I'm really nervous. I'm thinking it's not going to go well today, because the past two times haven't. And I thought, today is meditation day. Why don't I start early?
There you go.
Sat there in court in front of the judge, meditated with my eyes open, and just did deep breathing. And it helped.
Good.
I can check that one off as actually practicing this week before I can see it.
That's the way to practice. This is easy. Sitting here on a pillow, and everybody kind of breathing together and me ringing a little bell. But when you're sitting in front of the judge, getting ready to have your keister handed to you, that's what it really kind of, it makes a difference. That's really what practice is about, is it's what you do off the pillow. Right? This is the easy part. I hate to say that, but this is. So good. That's good.
I had a similar experience. I was out of state and arrested for using my prescription drugs while I was out on the road. And I feel like I didn't do anything wrong. I was doing, what I was supposed to be doing. And I don't know whether I'll be brought back and tried, or I won't know for maybe a month. So living with uncertainty is really, really difficult.
Mm. So has this helped, do you think?
It's helped a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah, I've been, busy dealing with the reality of the situation.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that situation, but, if this can make it slightly better, slightly less painful, right, which is really what slightly better is all about, I suppose, then maybe there's some benefit. I think the young lady in front of you had a comment too earlier.
Mine's not as intense as what they said.
Okay.
I just have trouble getting sleepy when I meditate.
Oh, you do?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And sometimes I think I'm sinking into a deeper level of consciousness or calm, and then I realize I'm actually dozing off.
Yeah, there's a fine line there.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about dullness and then overexcitation and some of the things that we can do about that. It might be the time of day. Are you doing morning or night or afternoon or?
Morning usually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you a morning person?
Not particularly, but I try these days.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that might make it a little bit of a challenge, but there's some different practices that you can do. Are you sitting for a long time? You're trying to do for 5-10 minutes or?
Maybe 20-30 minutes.
Okay. Then it might be do two shorter sessions, and stand up in between or something.
Mm-hmm.
I have coffee with me. I get my coffee cup. I'll sit there for a while. It gets cold, but I sit there for a while. So, maybe break it up a little bit or something. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about some other things here tonight, too. So, Anybody else?
So a good thing was that I taught someone else the 9-round.
Oh yeah.
And we did it together, so that was fun.
Okay.
But the problem that I'm having is that I'm a very forgetful person, and so I'm having trouble making this a daily habit, and even, you know, remembering to do it day to day. And
right.
So if other people have tips on what's working for them as far as establishing a habit, that would be helpful for me.
Anybody have any thoughts about that? Yes, sir.
I just use an app. I mean, so download it, it pops on, or set an alarm. I actually use an app, and it's been very helpful. I think it's called like Little Buddha or something like that. I'll look it up.
Okay, that's a good idea. All right. So things are going all right in general, it sounds like, for the most part. I thought about this on the way in. Like last time, you might have been thinking, oh, that was good. I need to make sure I come back next week. But maybe at about 4 o'clock this afternoon, the thought like, I guess I got to go to meditation class tonight. Does anybody have kind of that a little bit come up beside me? No. Yeah. Okay. It's funny how that works, right? I mean, once you're here, you're kind of like, you're always glad that you did it. But we tend to kind of slide back into our old habits, which is really what we're trying to battle against, you know. We get into our old habits, the way we're doing things, and get back into our routine, and it's hard to kind of break that. So I did a little bit of a motivation here before we started, but it really is, it's a wonderful thing that you were able to get yourself to come here to do this, you know. There's not many people out there that do or would. So, you know, that's a good thing. But you'll be battling that for a while, too, I'm sure. So, yes, ma'am.
This is the second time that I'm coming.
Uh-huh.
And, last week happened with me that was interesting was that I think the fact that I took the time to come here and sit down with everybody, do this breathing, and try to calm down my mind was the best day last week that I slept.
Oh, good.
And the reason why I decided to do this meditation is because I'm someone that I'm so busy with my daily life that by the time I put my head on the pillow, what has happened is that my brain was going crazy. I was like a wild horse. And I was like, okay, don't worry about it. And the more I thought about the worry about it, would worry even more.
Right.
And I was reaching a point in my life that I realized that my mind was somebody else in my body and I couldn't control. Especially at night, it was really hard for me. And I wake up in the middle of the night and thought, oh, I have to do this tomorrow. And I knew it's not going to change, wake up in the middle of the night, but it was just happening. So it's interesting for me when I came last week, and I agree with her. Sometimes it's hard to do in your daily life to take the time, or like I forget about it. But driving on my way, I realized how good just being here. For some reason, I go home and I already go a little bit on the relax mode.
Mm-hmm.
And it's allowed me to sleep, and I think it's a very therapeutic.
Oh, good. Good. Good.
To just like let the mind and think like, try to think about like you did last week and today, like just think about the ocean and I think slowly will come.
Right. It takes time. She said it's helped her sleep, basically, because you can let go of stuff that normally when you lay down, you start, you know, your mind starts going. You wake up in the middle of the night, you know, with a thought that you kind of cling on to and you make it a big story and you do all this other kind of stuff, and then the next morning it was nothing. The practice is just letting go. Just let go of that thought. And it's almost like, it's like a latex glove. I don't know how to describe it. It's like, like a latex glove. You can stretch it and you can get some separation, but then it snaps right back again. It's like it surrounds you, your thought processes. So if you can get in the habit of being able to create some space between you and the thought and pushing that thought away, you know, it's just that becomes easier and easier and easier, and you recognize you have control over so much more. You know, how much of our life is consumed with stories we've created that never come true, you know? And we just get consumed with that. So if we can let go of these things when they're in their infancy and not create these big stories out of them, it's a challenge, but you know, it's a practice, and it's an ongoing practice, but it really does have a lot of physical and psychological benefits, you know, so it's worth the effort. Yes, sir.
Dave, I know this is Meditation 101. What's the follow-up? Is there a follow-up?
Like 102?
Yeah.
Now, they've asked, that's come up before. I mean, there's other instructors. You might come to somebody else's 101 class, and because I'm assuming we're all doing them a little bit different. We have an outline, but it's all a little different. And you'll learn other techniques. The group meditations that they have here on Sunday morning, and that's Saturday mornings, I think, now too. You know, coming and listening to some of the teachings if you're interested in that, because he talks about this stuff. You know, this is what Buddhism is about too. They spend a lot of time talking about this. And then it's just practice and find a teacher and more information out there to help you deepen the practice. But we're just skimming the surface. You know, we're just skimming the surface. So I know we've talked about, you know, there's two types of meditations. Basically, they break it down, stabilizing and analytical. So, again, the stabilization meditations, or the focus meditation, is where, excuse me, we're either trying to build a level of concentration or that expansive mindfulness, you know. And then there's analytical meditation, or Vipassana, allows us to kind of work on things. So, you know, once we sharpen our focus and develop a better focus, then what is it that we can focus on? And typically what we try to focus on in would be things like, maybe compassion or gratitude or generosity. We'll do a meditation, I think, next week on contentment. Or, you know, what they call wisdom, which in Buddhism they talk about emptiness. You may have heard that mentioned before. But just understanding the impermanence of everything that's around. So, actually, I thought maybe this might be a good time to do a brief meditation on impermanence. And I thought maybe we'll kind of kick that off with that. But, and then we can talk a little bit more about some obstacles and things. But, so, We're gonna do just a short meditation. And again, when you think about what I describe, you know, you visualize like the ocean and the sky. So when I talk about this, you know, the idea is to try to get as much of that thought wrapped around these concepts as possible. And sometimes you'll get caught on something and your mind will get pulled away, but the idea again is to kind of pull it back to the guided meditation and focus on that. So sit again with your feet flat on the floor or on your cushion. Back straight, hands in your lap, top your head up, chin down, tongue at the roof of your mouth, and your eyes closed or slightly open. And then just do a little bit of breathing to kind of get your mind settled. I want you to think about how we're changing moment by moment. And actually, everything is. Is there anything that's not changing? I'm going to think about our body for a moment. Think about it as we breathe. Oxygen enters our lungs as we inhale. Oxygen or other particles in the room. These are picked up by our blood cells that are moving through our body like little taxi cabs. They're carried throughout, the oxygen is, and other gases. And at the same time, other gases and waste are transported to our lungs and expelled as we exhale. So throughout the day, our body takes in new materials and expels the old materials. It's a constant flow. Water, air, the components of the food that we eat become parts of our body, and the old parts are excreted. Our blood cells die every 120 days. And new ones are constantly being produced. About every 4 weeks, our skin cells die and fall off as new ones are being created from the products that we've been eating, drinking, and inhaling. So quite literally, we're not the same physical body we were a year ago. Nor are we the same physical body we're going to be a year from now. So do a mental scan around the room. And think of any object in this room and ask if that object is changing. The clothes we wear, the furniture in here, even the building is changing. What did these things look like a year ago? Five years ago, or 20 years ago. And what will they look like going forward a year, 5 years, or 20 years? And then stop and realize that every other human in this room will be gone in 100 years. And just kind of allow yourself time to reflect on the nature of change and recognize that everything is changing. So anything is possible. Were you able to do those visualizations and picture all of that stuff? All of it's true, right? I didn't make any of that up. But we don't think about that very often, do we? What was that experience like to think about how transient everything is? Do you normally think about that? Do we picture ourselves as kind of permanent? Everything around us kind of permanent? Even though we know it's not, we kind of live like that, right? As if it is. Yeah, it's good to kind of break it up and get back to reality every once in a while. So that's an analytical meditation. And I don't know if that makes sense. You know, we kind of analyze stuff. So at the end, when I asked, you know, to kind of cling to the nature of changing, hey there, were you able to hold on to that for a while? And then did it kind of start to get pulled away, or how long were you able to kind of hang on to that? Or sit with that feeling? Was it brief? And then a thought crept in there, and this and that. And then the chatter starts, right? So, but when you, how did it feel to sit with the idea that everything's changing all the time? Even if being able to sit with that was brief, was it a good feeling? It was kind of a letting go. I don't know, that's how I would describe it, but I don't know. So you kind of have this let go when you feel that, when you you get a deep sense of reality, which is what it was, right? So the concentration piece of our practice allows us to be able to hold on to that longer, you know? That's part of the purpose of doing the concentration is, you know, we try to strengthen that piece of our mental capacity so that when we do the analytical things, we can kind of hang on to those things a little bit longer. Okay, does that make sense? Okay. Any questions or thoughts about that? Yes.
I think there's a lot of wisdom in it, in that it helps to not get too attached to any external sources of happiness.
Mm-hmm.
That attachment, nothing, it is always, everything is always changing. And at the same time, it's good news when things are not going well, because you can also hold on to that thought.
Right. That's right. That's right. So these two gentlemen back here that had unhappy stories today, those will be gone, right? We think about...
I don't think mine was unhappy.
Well, it's not unpleasant circumstances, okay? To Karen's point, the unpleasant is as transitory as the things that we think are going to give us pleasure, you know? It's all just going away, just moving, changing constantly. And it's good to remind ourselves of that on a regular basis, you know, on a real regular basis if we can. So, yes, sir.
The past 10 years, I've dealt with a lot of chronic pain, and the stuff that you were talking about is the same. It's very similar to what helps me deal with it when it gets, you know, out of control, like visualizing the stuff in me changing and, like, all the positive. Direction going in to the spot that's bothering me.
Okay.
And I mean, it's right along the line, and I can, it helps a lot. So.
Okay, good. Was that a training that you had gone to, or?
No one taught me how to do it. It was just years of dealing with, you know, this stuff. Either find a way to cope with it or go crazy.
Right, right. And I think a lot of, like, Jon Kabat-Zinn's original stuff was working with chronic pain. People that, and patients that just had pain all the time. and no one else knew what to do, and had a lot of success from it. And I know there's a lot of programs that use this to deal with pain, so thank you. So, the obstacles that we have, there's the drowsiness or the dullness, and then there's the distraction, right, or the scattered mind that can kind of come up and pull us away in different directions. So a lot of this, you know, a lot of what we're working on, it's like we're trying to channel. One example is, you know, we got water running in all sorts of different directions, and we're just trying to be able to channel that. Or it might be another example is, you know, a radio, you know, the old, and you know, they don't have them like that, the old fashioned dial, you know, like your great grandparents had the dial thing. You have to go up a little bit and go down a little bit. So you're trying to fine tune it to get that sweet spot between where it's, you know, you're alert. Because you want to be alert, you don't want to be sleeping, and yet you don't want your mind to be racing. So you have to kind of balance that. And that, my understanding, that's kind of the key to the whole thing. You know, people are constantly working on fine-tuning that better and better and better and better. The end game in one of the end games, I guess it's not the end game, in the concentration is a state that they call calm abiding or samatha, which is where you can hold your attention on an object for as long as you choose to and let go of everything else. And it's supposedly, this is one of the states that's real blissful. This is where, you know, they kind of get the bliss thing that goes along with the meditation. That to be able to sit like that, calm abiding, where your mind's real pliant and relaxed but alert, and you just recognize that you are just awareness, you know, our thing that we call mind is just a level of awareness. And to get to that state, my understanding is just a lot of fine tuning, you know, between these two states of overexcitation and sleepiness all the time. So there's other stuff in there, but that's really the hard part, is always a balancing act in there. So distractions, if we think about things that can kind of overcome that. Some of the recommendations would be focusing firmly on the breath to calm the mind down. The 9-round breathing, Geshe-la, I think he talked about that this Sunday. He said something about that, didn't he? Do you remember what he said about 9-round breathing? I'm sorry, I can't remember your name. Behind Mike. Yeah. Were you here on Sunday? Yeah, do you remember what Geshe-la said? Mike, you were here on Sunday. Do you remember what he said about 9-round breathing?
No.
Okay, I'm not quizzing anybody here, because I don't remember either. But he talked about 9-round breathing. I think he said, I made a note to mention it, I think he said that it helps us in terms of, in preparation, kind of help us keep that balance between excitation and the dullness. So by doing the 9-round breathing at the beginning kind of helps us set that. Some of the things is if you're visualizing, if you use some visualization meditations, so sometimes people will picture something like a little statue, and that'll be the focus that they use, or try to create something that's small in your mind, small and heavy, will sometimes help increase if you've got an overactive mind. Okay. Engage in a short reflection on sobering subjects, such as death or impermanence. So that impermanence meditation that we just did is a good way, if your mind is distracted, to try to kind of pull it back. I'm not sure that we'll do a meditation on death. I'll have to look and see. That always, everybody thinks, that sounds kind of gruesome. But it's really, if we stop, and there's some good material, I'm sure in Kathleen McDonald's book, she has some death meditations. We think about, you know, we take this thing that we talked about, like the impermanence, and we just kind of apply it to the fact that, you know, we're going to all be gone someday, and we don't live our lives that way. But to recognize, you know, there's a series of meditations, 9 components that you do, to recognize that death is certain. I mean, we live as if it's not. And the time of death is uncertain. And there's other things that are kind of, that we just kind of focus on a little bit. And it helps pull us back down to reality, you know. So if our minds are distracted, thinking about the certainty of death is something that can kind of pull us back down. And these are all things that, you know, that you can do to kind of, again, help. Sometimes check your physical posture. Your head may be too high. The lights might be too bright. This is where, if you are easily distracted, try meditating with your eyes completely closed. And conversely, if sleepiness is a problem, try meditating with your eyes open. You know, fixate on a spot somewhere on the wall, and sometimes that added light will help you stay awake a little bit. Anybody else have any ideas if you start to get too distracted?
Guy Armstrong says when he was living as a monk that he was taught to pull his earlobes.
Oh, really?
He was falling asleep.
That made it. Thanks, sir. I was going to whack it, but that looked like that was a better choice. So sleepiness, check your posture. If you're dropping too far forward, your spine may not be straight. That may kind of contribute to your sleepiness a little bit. Turn up the light. Geshe does this meditation, then it's actually interesting. You know, they have it described in here. So he visualizes a seed, and he gets, we spent a little time on it, kind of at the abdomen, and he's got a shape, it's shaped like an egg. But you imagine something shooting up out of the top of your head and expanding into the sky. And that visualization will help kind of wake you up a little bit and make you a little bit more alert. And it actually worked pretty well. Reflect on something joyful. So don't do the death meditation. You know, we're kind of going to go the other direction there. Think of something happy. And then get enough sleep was one of the other things that they said in there. So all of those above. And it's just a matter. I suggest maybe changing time. Lost again. We're going in and out. That might do it. Changing the time that you meditate. You just have to kind of play around with things a little bit, and you'll find something. Yes, ma'am.
I know this will sound crazy, but one technique that I realize has helped me a lot is to go run, to exercise.
Go run.
Run.
Yeah.
I notice when I sit in here, like when I start, I feel like, oh, my back hurts, and I'm like doing this all the time.
Yeah.
I realized that I didn't have the physical stamina. So what I start to do is running. I don't know, when you run after a while and you start to release the endorphins. You start to be physically in shape.
Okay.
And then at the end of the day when I meditate, I feel better and more capable to be in this position.
Okay.
And I noticed that I become less distracted.
Oh, good. All right, that's good. I think that's probably why yoga goes so well with some of the stuff too, is it kind of opens things up a little, gets things going. Yeah, exercising is good. If you eat, like a lot of the monks won't eat a meal after lunch, and, you know, help them stay awake and stay alert too in the afternoon. So that's another thing that may help. Don't try to do this after eating, you know, big meal. Thanksgiving, don't go down. All right. Any other thoughts? Comments? All right. Well, what we're going to do is break up in pairs. Or three people if you want to do that. And then talk about some of the challenges that you face, maybe in terms of distractions or dullness or sleepiness, some of the things that you've done, maybe share some ideas on how you might have changed things up a little bit or just kind of struggled with that. And, yeah, we'll just talk about that a little bit, and then we're going to kind of come back and share some of those stories. Make sense? It'll make sense once you start talking about it. It's the instructions. I got to go along with the instructions. I can't change it too much. Does anybody have something they want to share? Any real insights? Anything come out of that discussion? Was it good? So what kind of things came up? Yes, please. Oh, wait. Chris, give you the microphone. Yes.
Thank you very much. As you were talking about, when our minds go obsessed about something and then we construct, things and it goes, it grows and grows and grows. I had a question about, is it sometimes, it's good that to concentrate and to think about, not obsessing, but sometimes would it be better to maybe act and maybe if let's say, take an example, if your job is really bad and you're not happy at your job, is it better to get rid of the job or to try to sort of do the mindfulness and calm yourself down and not obsess about your problem?
Yeah, that's a tough one to answer. Here's the thing. Of course, we can't make that decision for you,
it's just an example, like that,
Right. So the saying is, Shanti Davis said, I think it was Shanti Davis said that.
My friend.
If you have a problem, if you can do something about it, don't worry, just do something about it, right? If you can't do anything about it, don't worry about it, because you can't do anything about it.
Okay, all right.
Right? The bottom line is don't worry about it, because we obsess over those things, right? So, making that decision is really, that's where the wisdom piece kind of comes in.
Because I was wondering, is the wisdom, that it's a thin line, is the wisdom about not worrying about anything because in the end everything is transient and, why would I worry about a job or whatever else? Or is it, or should I act and not cause myself pain if I can do something about it?
So. Right. And the argument is don't cause yourself pain either way.
Yeah.
Because if you can do something, go ahead. Mm-hmm. And if you can't, then, don't. There's no need to cause pain over that, right? Sometimes Geshe-la will say we add suffering to suffering, right? Yeah. It's enough that we have a problem, but then we add all of this other junk on top of that. We just kind of slather it with more issues. And so we just compound our suffering substantially. Okay. And so the bottom line is, you can't worry about it either way. You need to kind of let go in both situations. So. I'm sorry, you were going to say something?
I was going to say I've walked that path, and quick jobs and the new job doesn't help if you haven't fixed inside yourself what's
causing
the problems.
Right.
And if it's obsessing, which is something I'm pretty darn good at, a gentleman over here talked about how impermanence, meditations on impermanence helps him with pain. It helps me a lot with my OCD.
Okay.
To recognize impermanence, because a lot of those obsessions are I'm right.
Right, right.
Over and over and over telling you that story, and I'm angry because they're wrong.
Yeah.
And they don't recognize that I'm right.
Right, right.
And that meditation on impermanence can really help me release my need to be right. And then when I don't have that, it almost doesn't matter what job I do. It becomes a lot easier to be happy.
Yeah, that's good. Because, we've got our stories, we're always right, right? And the other person's always right.
They're always wrong.
You're not following my story, though. You're following your story. Yeah, yeah. And Geshe-la says it's amazing that we get along as well as we do. You know, given the fact that we're all individual egos and people focus really on their own self-centeredness. We are. I mean, we see ourselves as the center of the universe. And, not literally, but, yeah, literally, I suppose. But, you know, our view is the right one and everybody else is wrong, and I just have to convince them or else they stay out of my way. And we even, you know, you do meditations on equanimity, thinking about, you know, what was, we label a friend who was once an enemy, you know, we've got a stranger who now becomes a friend or a stranger becomes an enemy. And we put these different labels on people, whether they do stuff that we like or dislike, you know. And yet they're following their own story altogether. They're not even thinking about us. And so we're just kind of banging into each other like a bunch of, like driving those little Dodge'em cars or something. And it's really quite amazing that we're able to get along as well as we do, I suppose. So, I don't know where I was going with that. But,
yeah. James, this is going to sound like a sophomore question, and I apologize, but...
Oh, Chris wants to give you the mic so we get that sophomore question on there.
Thank you very much, Chris, for the sophomore question. What you just described, in getting past all of that, can... the study of Buddhism and meditation get people there? Does it get people there? Because that's really where I'd like to be. I want to rise above the pettiness of everyday life that affects all of us.
That's the idea. That's kind of the bottom line idea, is to get pat, you know, let go of all this stuff. And it's not just a, you know, it's gone. It's a like sanding a huge block of wood, you know, or polishing a mirror or whatever, you know, it's a long, slow process that you chip away with a little bit at a time. You know, when we think, I was gonna mention some of the antidotes to some of these things, but I'll mention like anger. You know, anger is the one that disturbs a lot of people. And I don't have a whole lot of trouble with that one. That one's a relatively easy one for me. I've got some other ones that are I battle with a lot. But, you know, I was at a fast food place or Brugger's or something, and somebody came in, and the guy was a real jerk, you know. He drove a nice car and he had a suit on, but he was treating everybody like really poorly and, you know, yelling at people and just, we were just all kind of everybody standing there staring at this guy. But I kind of had this flash, this vision of, you know, of him and his anger that he had. And I imagined an animal with its leg caught in a trap, you know, that is going to bite at anything that gets near it, you know, like a dog. And all of a sudden I didn't have anger for him. I just thought, whatever. It just kind of turned into compassion. It just kind of, just all of a sudden, wow, you know, this guy is really having a hard time, you know. Even though he was what would be appear to be an enviable position in life, he was doing well or whatever, he was miserable. And that manifests as anger to him. So just little things like that. You know, little things begin to kind of shift a little bit if we can change our storyline just enough to flop it around. And then all of that stuff is just people acting out their stories. You know, the person that cuts you off on the road, on the highway, they didn't spend all day thinking about that. But yet, you know, we have this story going through our head that, you know, that guy did that intentionally. I've cut people off before. It was never intentional. At least not recently. No. You know, I don't know. We don't know the stories that are going through that causes people to do mindless things. You know, we just see the behaviors. And we lay this intention on them, behind their behaviors. And those stories are often wrong. And even if they're not wrong, it's just a story we made up, so why not make up a different one? You know? If we're just making them all up, that's the beauty behind this, is then we get to choose the stories we make up. You know? Right? I mean, we're just making them up, so now we get to pick which stories we want to make up. And that just becomes a game changer if you can start, you know, pardon me? Yeah, that's where liberation begins. Once you realize you can do that, you know, that's the key, is realizing, you know, I can do that. I can change that story because I just made that up. I had a lady in our neighborhood that was, you know, we had, there's two streets that run in parallel, and there's a big Harris Teeter over here, and there's this little lady. She's kind of eccentric. You know, I see her out walking around, but she's pushing a shopping cart, all right? And the story that came to my mind is, that lady stole a shopping cart. You know? I was driving by it. I thought, she stole a shopping cart. And I thought, well, maybe she's taking it back. You know, maybe she found a shopping cart and she's taking it back to Harris Teeter. I don't know which one's right. But that sure changed my impression of her substantially, you know? Either way, it was a story, right? Pardon me? So, yeah. We get to choose. And that's what this is all about. That's what the Buddhism is all about, is that it's our mind that we get to control. You know? Normally our mind is controlling us and jerks us around all sorts of different directions. And slowly, slowly, slowly you begin to take control of it yourself. And then what I heard was, instead of being buried by your problems, you know, you kind of get on top of them. You know, you can kind of get above them. And they're just problems. And as long as your intentions are good, you do them the best you can, you know, regardless of what other people think, because that's their story. You know? It's easy to say, though. All right, I kind of ran off with that a little bit. So I apologize. I'm sorry. Were you gonna...
I have a question. I don't know if there's... Wait.
Oh, I'm sorry, Chris. I'm...
Thank you.
Okay. So I don't know if there's data out there about kind of when you meditate with, like, people that you leave on a daily basis, from a coworker to your significant other, you know, your kids, if that actually have way more benefits on kind of really teach you how to meditate it well. And the example why I'm asking this question is that we were talking about how, for example, her mom calling all the anxiety, calling all the time, like already put her on that, you know, nervous kind of mood. And the same with me, kind of with my work and my daily life. And I have been meditating for years, and I have been noticed that it's so easy for a child to learn a second language. You guys probably noticed from my accent, I'm from Brazil, so English is actually my third language, and I struggle so much to learn because I learned when I was older. And my kids, they can flip-flop between English and Portuguese at home just like that. So the brain when you are young is just amazing. And I have been trying to meditate with them because I can see how easy for them is to walk in a park and just pay attention to that flower and nothing else, and don't worry about nothing else. And I think as we move along with our life, we need to be multitask, and then there's this fine line between, can I really focus on all these things, really focus one at a time, or can you just... I just noticed that with me, I was just going like all over the place and not really being able to.
Right.
And then when I was coming home, I think it happens probably with everybody. My husband was so negative about his work and was only talking about the negative things, and you always just trying to, at the end of the day, most, at least what happened with me, I was just remember the negative things of everything that happened. The guy who cut me on the car, the person who was angry with me, and I was angry because whatever reason. And then I realized that, I think like a cup, if you have a half cup of water, you ask people, do you think it's half full or half empty?
Right.
And I was always thinking it was half empty, because I was always thinking like everybody's not, I'm the one with the problem, but also everybody around me. So I started to meditate with my husband. Like, instead of walk home and you tell me all the negative things, please just tell me the positive, because I'm not strong enough, my brain, to just meditate and forget everything bad around me. And at least with us, it starts to help. And I don't know if you, with your experience or people who come here, like, maybe that's why we are maybe everybody feel a little bit better when we leave because we do this as a group, and trying to do this with, like, the person is, you know, you sleep every night, like your significant other or whatever,
right.
Has a more strong, make you more engaged to succeed, you know.
So group meditation or meditating with people? Yeah, there's a lot of merit if a couple or family can do this collectively. Because then you're practicing this together too, you know. I think it's, you know, it can be challenging if one person wants to do that and they don't have other folks around them that are willing to support that. And it might be that they're willing to support that. You know, I guess it's to degrees. If you're not being discouraged from it, that's okay. And then, you know, how much support do you get? And then if they actually, you can do it together, you know, that, I think that creates even a higher level of practice. Because then you each are kind of recognizing, you're working the dance together, so to speak. And it doesn't mean you can't do it by yourself. I don't mean to imply that or that, but I think it does make it easier if you're with somebody else. That's my opinion too. I know, you know, they try to do group meditations for that reason though too. So other.
And Maria also equated meditation to, like, if it was something like brushing your teeth that you learned as a child to just do, how much easier it would be and how that challenge could be taken away. And so I think that's part of her instilling that in her kids is excellent, because if we all have been doing this for a while, since if this was a habit since we were little, to just take some time, just how amazing that could be for it just to be a habit. And then to see how our practice could grow.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
Another thing that we talked about a lot was focus. So in meditation, you're focusing. And then for me personally, it's helped me focus on other things. We talked a lot about, like she was saying, about my mom calling and how attached I was to my phone. And as soon as it buzzes, right, there's a message, and how reactive I feel to having to respond.
Uh-huh.
But also going on hikes and being able to focus on just being in the woods and not focus on taking a picture and capturing moments.
Yeah.
So just changing focus. I think meditation has helped in a lot of very random, weird, small ways like that.
Yeah, good. And I think it creeps in small. You know, it kind of just eases in there in different aspects too. There's some research, and somebody correct me if I'm wrong, is that we really can't multitask. What we're doing is we're chopping things up into bits and pieces and dealing with little bits and pieces at a time. And it really makes us less effective, is my understanding. I think that's what the current literature and research kind of supports, so. When we think we're being better, we're really not. And so, and even with grabbing at your phone, you know, it's just a matter of, you know, if you grab it within a second, try to make it 2 seconds. You know, just trying to stretch that out a little bit. If you go to the grocery store and you get irritated standing in lines, you know, try not to get irritated standing in line, but stand in line anyway and just try to work with that emotion that arises. Because that, you know, it's not going to shorten anything. It's not going to change anything. We just stew over things that we don't need to stew over, you know? All right. We have one more meditation that we'll do. And this is one of your handouts. It's on transforming negative experiences into positive experiences. So, it may just be transforming the negative. You know, if we can get rid of the negative part, that's a huge part right there. So, all right. So maybe off into the parking lot in your mind, think of something that in the last day or week or whatever has disturbed you or bothered you, has created some level of anger. And don't focus on that yet, but just kind of have something in the ready. And then, you know, get yourself in your normal 7-point position. And a few breaths in and out. And get your mind settled. And I want you to think about that experience that you had today, yesterday, or the last week or whatever, that was difficult, might have created a sense of impatience or anger, or you lost your temper or whatever. And I want you to replay the story in your head, as we often do after those situations occur. Remember what you said or what you did or what the other person said or did. And then your reaction to that. Now see if you can't notice a similar physical sensation that you had at the time it actually occurred. And what was that physical sensation? It may have been tightness at the back of your neck or your shoulders. But there was a physical sensation that went along with that. And if you acted out on your anger, did that response help? And then recall the other person's response. Sometimes it escalates like a circle of anger, like a dance. And then think about the disadvantages and the harmful effects caused by the anger. I mean, we can think about that on a physiological level. Of the things that change in your body with your blood pressure and your heart rate. Certain hormone levels go up. But then, how did the anger then make you feel? Did it lead towards words, more words? And how did those make you feel? Did it lessen the anger or just increase it? Think about the people that might have been around watching. Might be coworkers, might be children. Did it make them happy? And did it make the situation better? You can almost step back and look at it like you're watching a play to see how it played out. Now think of what it might have been to have done it differently. To have not engaged. Have made the decision not to get into that dance. Sometimes we think anger is strength. When Dalai Lama says that patience is actually strength, to not react, to not counter somebody's anger with more anger. Then think about how you might handle that differently the next time. Were you able to relive the story? It's amazing how we relive those stories sometimes, I think. You know, we play them over and over again. Could you notice a physical sensation that went along with it? It was pretty obvious. Now, were you able to play it differently? It's harder to do, isn't it? We kind of get caught up in that, you know, the way it plays out. I don't know, sometimes we have some discussions about this too. Is anger strength? Or is the patience strength? I mean, when we're in the midst of it, the anger feels strong, doesn't it? Feels powerful. Like the Hulk, you know.
I just almost say that fear often precedes anger, so in that sense it's not strength.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, fear is kind of a... Okay. Fear of losing something or not getting what we want or whatever.
Or reacting because we feel threatened.
Okay, yeah. Right, no fear. So patience is a term that they use. Tolerance is one that they use too. It's just, you know, tolerate. Other comments? It's 8:29. Thoughts? Questions? Ready to go home. All right. Homework for next week is, I guess, just more of the same. Try to work on, there's no particular handout that they have here, same as class two. Try to work with some of this transforming, like reframing negative things. And try to do what we call pre-framing. There's things that come up that we know are going to make us angry. Right? And try to replay that story differently before you get into that story and see how effective that is in maybe changing the story and the outcome a little bit. You've got nothing to lose, right, by playing with it. You know, take your mask off for a little bit and try it out a little. So, and again, you know, just take a moment to think about, you came here tonight. You know, you made the motivation to come here. You spent an hour and a half in this session working with each other, working on your mind, which is huge. And then, you know, that's got some merit to it. So you know, dedicate that to all the people that weren't able to come here, I suppose. Maybe, you know, maybe somewhere down the road they'll be able to come and learn a little bit about this. So, all right, have a good night. Safe travels home. You're welcome. Thank you.